This is the time when we turn our attention toward your questions, which I invite you to type into the chat box starting now. A couple notes, and the first is about privacy. If you would like to ask an anonymous question, which is our tradition when we're able to gather in person, you can send a private message to me. You can just select my name on the chat menu. I will know who it's from, but no one else will be able to see that information. Otherwise, you can just chat out your question to everyone. As is our tradition, you may ask anything about me personally, about the fellowship or Unitarian Universalism in general, about theology or the larger picture of anything meaningful that occurs to you. I will take a handful of questions depending on how much I am able to master my tendency toward long-windedness. And then we're gonna pause for some special music and then dive into a second round of questions and comments. What was your impression of the protest yesterday and your children's impression? I've heard reports ranging from 1 to 3,000 people in attendance at the Black Lives Matter march that ended at Houdini Plaza. And my kind of first impression was just surprise and pleasure at the turnout. As Unitarian Universalists, how can we respond to the protests that are happening around our country in response to George Floyd's death, knowing that it is but one example of white supremacy culture? I've been thinking a lot about this spiritually, and an image that was offered to me by my colleague, a minister in our movement, Abai Janamanji, is the image of a tent. He preached once about a tent and asked us to imagine a tent and setting up a campsite. And he noted that the important thing about a tent is that the center inside stay flat and dry. And he described that the way you accomplish that, the way you center a tent, is by the attention you pay to the margins. So you make sure that the tent stakes can go into solid, stable ground. You make sure they're anchored properly, etc. And so he asked us to think about that as an image for Unitarian Universalist beliefs and ideas about the world. That if we care about the center, the everybody, one way we can gauge how we're doing is by looking at what level, what quality and quantity of attention we pay to those at its margins. And that's a really helpful framework for me because it allows me to think about what is most important and that process of how and why attention is being paid. And so, for example, to flesh that out a little bit, instead of centering the people or the institutions with power or property, and this kind of set of arguments that I find not the heart of it, so this question of like, are police officers good or bad, right? And I think, you know, spoiler alert, they are human beings. That instead of kind of thinking about the police force who are paid to protect especially property, we ask, who's at the margins of this tent of society in this case? Who is suffering the most from an unfair system? And then we can notice that there are brown bodies, Black people and Indigenous people especially have the worst outcomes from dealing with policing and prison institutions. And so then we can return to the center with an image of a system that can work better for everyone at the margins as a way to care for every single person and invite every body, every idea, every demographic into that center. And so I think that, I guess the one other thing that I want to say to that is that I think that these are really important political questions, economic questions, cultural questions, they're medical questions, they're educational system questions, they're housing industrial complex questions. But that here, what I want to think about is the spiritual question, and that spiritual question of care for the center of who we are, as a one way that we can express that we can action that, is with the attention that we pay to the margins. So we have a private question from a child. Does anyone here suck their thumb besides me, or am I alone in that? And I wanna say that I don't happen to suck my thumb, but I sometimes bite my fingernails, and I feel really embarrassed about that sometimes, even though I know that there's nothing wrong with it, but it does make me feel shy. So I'm just wondering if anyone here ever has or does suck their thumb, if they feel comfortable sharing that, if you wanna just type in the chat box, I've done that, or I sometimes do that, or I used to do that, and when I was ready, maybe I stopped. Maybe that would be a welcome act of solidarity for our questioner. Thank you for asking that question. What do you miss most about being sheltered at home? I think the question is, what do you miss most about the outside world? And for me, there was an ease, and I know that this is some about privilege, but there was an ease with which I moved through the world that I took for granted, and I no longer do. And I try to be grateful for maybe what that helps me learn, but I really miss that sense of going out into the world without thinking about masks and hand sanitizer and safety and what I might transmit or bring back home. And I think that that's a kind of a slow, subtle subtext of grief and longing for me. The Philippine Unitarian Universalists have an eighth principle. There is a God, and God is love. Why not us? Perhaps in light of our many agnostics, it could be, if there is a God, perhaps it's love. Oh, that's so interesting. I love that we're holding up the diversity within Unitarian Universalism, that the UU Church of the Philippines shares our beliefs and has a really different way of expressing them. There is actually some movement in the Unitarian Universalist Association here continentally to add an eighth principle that's about a commitment to racial justice. I don't have the language on the tip of my tongue. But I think that what I'm really in favor of, and I really, I like this idea about connecting God and love strongly. I like the idea of an anti-racist principle. But I think what's really important to me is this sense of faithful evolution. This idea that spirit is still moving within and among us, and that we're still learning and growing in our ways to experience and express spiritual truth. So I like the idea of adding principles as they emerge as I was going to say necessary, but as they emerge as helpful. So I am going to leave it there, and we're going to turn our attention towards a song that asks its own set of questions, and then we're going to come back to our questions, so feel free to keep typing. I'm gonna answer some more questions, but I wanna say that I got a lot of private responses, and then there's quite a few more public comments about thumb sucking. And one of the interesting private ones is from someone who sucks their thumb, especially when they're thinking really deeply. So that to me is an example of how it can even be a helpful practice that helps someone think really deeply about all of the important things in life. So I hope if you need a little bit of thumb sucking reassurance, you can read some of the comments or get an adult to help you do that. Here's another private question. With an overwhelming negative, I think with an overwhelmingly negative this past week, how do we find the good? How do we not be swallowed by it and think nothing will change or get better? How do we stay positive? That is a huge set of questions. And I think for me, I want to just share that when things are hard, it can be a lot of pressure to feel like we have to stay positive. And I know in my own life and my own practice, I try really hard to believe the reality of the bad, but also believe the reality of the good, and to not put pressure on myself to tie it all up with sunshine and cream cheese and puppies, because sometimes that just doesn't feel real. And there can be some peace that comes from knowing that it is hard, but also putting myself directly in the path of the good, even the tiny good, even if it's a good that doesn't seem to be as sweeping and worrisome as the bad. And so I just offer that to you, to any of you, if that might be a helpful practice, that sense of acceptance, but also noticing the good as well as the hard, maybe in some really practical ways, like beginning or ending each day, sharing gratitudes with a roommate or journaling about the good stuff and knowing that the bad stuff is there too, but not focusing on it. And then I think that the other piece is to ask yourself, and if there is people who you might trust, ask them if maybe they think, or if you think you've reached a point where there needs to be some other kind of intervention. If despair is crowding out daily life to the point where seeking help with some kind of a counselor or therapist or psychiatrist might help you. And I would be happy to be a resource in helping you get to someone like that, if that would be helpful to you. But I do want to just spotlight that when times are hard, it's okay to not feel positive. Another private question: how are we going to reconcile as a society without national leadership? I think that's going to be hard, and there are ways that it's not going to be possible to do it. But I think that it is a hard, but ultimately important reality that each of us understand that we need to be a part of a different system. There's no one who is able or willing to save us from a system that's not fair, even regardless of whether we like or trust the person in office. My mother asked, this is a private question. My mother asked if by becoming a member of the Unitarian Universalist tradition, I was renouncing my Christian baptism and confirmation. What is the appropriate response? So Unitarian Universalism is actually really, really clear about this. Becoming Unitarian Universalist is not a rejection or a critique of any other faith tradition. In Unitarian Universalism, you are allowed to hold multiple faith identities. We have the minister I quoted extemporaneously when we, in response to the question that Marie Luna asked, Abhay Jadamanshi. He is one of the leaders of Hindu Unitarian Universalism. He grew up in a Hindu tradition, and he now claims Hinduism and Unitarian Universalism. We have atheist Unitarian Universalists, etc. There are some traditions, so there are some Christian traditions who would welcome the sibling nature of a shared identity. There are some Christian traditions who would take a Unitarian Universalist identity or membership in one of our congregations as a deal breaker for them. And that's real. That's something that someone for whom that was meaningful would have to grapple with. There can be some sorrow and grief about feeling rejected by a faith community if that is happening. But I want to be really clear that theologically, historically, practically, organizationally, in Unitarian Universalism, we do not welcome you in as a rejection of any other tradition of your origins. And if you choose to reject or evolve past some other marker of a different faith tradition, that's also okay too. But we ask that you think about what your spirit needs, and we will encourage and affirm that. Here's a private question. Do you believe our world can ever return to anything we have known, or are we forever changed? Must we adapt to a new normal? And what do you think that might look like? I am struggling with too many unknowns. It is causing a lot of uncontrolled emotion, questioning, and worry. I think that in some ways, our world will slip into exactly what it has always been. And I think in some ways, we are changed forever. And that does mean that there will be a new normal, that every day is a new normal. And that there are ways that we can't predict what is to come. And I say that feeling mad about its truth and knowing that it's stressful and annoying to not know what's coming, especially for those of us who might have had a little bit more control before, to have to give that up is really, really heart-wrenching. And I know I was one of the people who took very seriously the novel coronavirus threat, but I did it like very soon after I learned about it. But I did it in this really naive way of like, okay, I'm going to stock up my groceries for 2 weeks without this sense of like, well, and then what? And now I'm realizing that it's lasted and it is lasting longer than I want it to. And I don't have any control over that. And so I think that the new normal right now is to live in the unknown. And I wonder if it might be helpful to simply acknowledge it, not as the new normal forever, but to really embrace the difficulty of the new normal now is to live in the unknown. There's some really cool practices that you might be able to read more about just with some simple Googling. But there are some like very ritualized practices of creating a list of what it is you know to be true and repeating it to oneself in really ritualistic ways. The idea is you start with something small that you know and you move outward. One of the characters in the Hunger Games trilogy does this in one of the later books in a really kind of interesting, cool way, if anyone is a Hunger Games fan. But you start with what you know. So for example, you know, I'm Leah. That's something really clear and concrete that I know. And then you move out in circles. You know, I am Leah. I am sibling of Rose. I am current resident of Appleton. I am, and then whatever framework makes sense for you, it's a way to be situated in uncertainty. But also know that you know some pieces of truth, and that can be a comfort. And I know that it's not an ultimate comfort. I also think it's really hard right now for a lot of us. And I am with you in solidarity, even as I'm sure I can't understand exactly what it's like. One person comments, I like to think of moving forward, not back. I'm seeing some really beautiful comments. I'm just scrolling up for some questions. With summer break coming fast, do you have any suggestions for kids to have fun but stay safe? Not as many as I would like. How about anyone who does have suggestions, type them in the comment box and then I can plan my children's summer program. That would be really great. Thanks. Someone says privately, this is a private question, how can we break through the wall of white liberalism to be a truly liberated and intersectional faith? I think that, I think it's really important that Unitarian Universalism and that Unitarian Universalists be as anchored as we can in both our limitations and also our resources. I think we have a lot to offer ourselves and the world. And I also think that we're not perfect. It's often said that Sunday morning is the most segregated hour in this country. And I think that that's a metaphor to apply to faith communities, even those who don't gather on Sunday morning traditionally. And I think that while I don't know exactly how to get to this promised land of ultimate beloved community, it does help me to focus on where we are now. Right now, the fellowship is primarily white identified in its membership. And I want to be really clear that that doesn't mean that we're all white. We're not. There are people of color among us from a variety of different identities. So I think it's okay to talk about what our demographic is. But I want to, and speaking in generalizations is helpful. It's helpful to describe, but we don't want to render anyone invisible either. So that's why I'm making that distinction between majority, but not completely white. But what I do know to be true is that as a majority white congregation, we have, I would say, the obligation, but also the opportunity to figure out how to be the best version of our community that we can be. To not wait for some individual or group of individuals to come and help make us this multiracial vision that we might dream of, whether or not that happens. The challenge before us now, I think, is to keep working on our own stuff and to keep asking hard questions that are rooted in love and to ask them of ourselves and each other. And I think that that's one of the ways to practice intersectional faith where we are, so that if we get somewhere else and as we evolve in our journey, we can practice liberated intersectional faith there too. I am going to take one more question. Oh, I am going to read some comments about what my children will now be doing this summer. Backyard camping. Well, that's a good idea. Teach them to cook. My kids have been, we've been doing a ton of cooking and baking, which has been really fun. Raise a garden together. A lot of arts organizations and performers are streaming free performances online, biking, walking, playing in the backyard. We've been doing a lot of those activities. A joke stand, like a lemonade stand, but you tell people bad jokes at a distance. Everyone can cruise by Brian Merton's house. I'm assuming he's going to set that up for us. Some other good options. So I'm sure that I've missed quite a few deep and important and heartfelt questions. I'm going to close with one more that I see asked privately. But if there is a question that you actually really need a practical answer to, you're welcome to email me. And I also want you to know that the chat history of the messages is saved. And so Marie Luna, our Congregational Life Director, always looks through it. I'm going to look through it. So know that your question, even if unanswered, will be held in intention. This last, I think it's a private question, is what do kids need to hear? I think that children need to hear probably what all people need to hear. I think they need to hear thank you and I'm sorry. I think hearing and I love you. I should have started with that. I think that all human beings need to hear I love you and I'm sorry and thank you.